You're listening to the Ardent Development Podcast with Ron Smith and Derek Hatchard. Whatever your role in the software development industry, join them in the search for inspiration and insights as they talk with practitioners and thought leaders from the world of tech and beyond. Visit ardentdev.com to subscribe to new episodes.
Today on the Ardent Development Podcast, we are speaking with Mike Hayes. Mike is a certified coach, teacher, and speaker with the John Maxwell team and the president of Changing Leaf, a leadership development company dedicated to developing better leaders. He's also the co-author of Volume 2 of the book Dreaming Big and Being Bold, Inspiring Stories from Trailblazers, Visionaries, and Changemakers. Recently, Ron sat down with Mike to interview him for his managingprojects.ca website, and we thought that Mike would be an ideal first guest for the Ardent Development Podcast. With that, I'll hand it over to you, Ron.
Welcome, everybody. This is the first episode of the Ardent Development Podcast. We have Mike Hayes from Changing Leaf from Moncton, New Brunswick. So welcome, Mike.
Thanks for having me. Good to hear you guys.
Good to hear you.
Welcome, Mike.
Thank you.
So listen, we were chatting last week about this whole concept of you're working with people who are going through a transition, coaching them, and they're in a new role. And we had talked a little bit about what you would say to them, how you would coach them. And after this conversation, I started thinking, well, what about those people who are in a role and they're just passed up for these opportunities and they can't figure out why? Can you unlock that mystery to some degree of, because you see this with people that say, why does Billy get this promotion? You know, I'm working hard. In fact, in some cases, I may think I'm working harder. I don't get it. Can you unlock that for us for a little bit?
Yeah, it's a fantastic question. And it's one that I think many people in different organizations are struggling with, right? Like, how do I make that leap from the position I currently have to go up to the next rung of the ladder? And I guess I'll just speak from my personal experience working in a large organization for over 20 years. I was that person who was moving up in the organization and having the opportunity to contribute at higher levels. And I was doing that while my peers were observing this happening. And I remember them asking me, like, how come you're getting selected to go and be part of these initiatives? And I'm like, well, one of the things that I'm doing is taking control of my own development. I'm not waiting for the organization to say, well, here's how we plan to develop you. And here's a training session that you can attend. Like, I didn't wait for any of that. I started reading books on leadership. I started attending conferences. I started to watch TED Talks. And what I was learning, I was sharing and bringing that into conversations with leaders in our organizations, and they could see that I was bringing more value to the conversation. And I think that was part of the reason why I was able to have the opportunities that I had, is because I took control of my own development.
So you didn't worry about, you know, who's going to pay for my books, who's going to pay for my subscription you just did it.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I saw the value in it. I'm also like a lifelong learner. I have what I call an AOL, which is an attitude of a learner. And when you have the attitude of a learner, you can just gain so much knowledge from everybody that's around you. I think sometimes when people look at opportunities to learn, they think, well, that only happens if I go to a classroom. That only happens if I attend a webinar. And those are great, great things to go to by all means. But sometimes they're not the most convenient for people. And there's learning opportunities in books, and you can select mentors that are famous people and learn from them, like John Maxwell and Patrick Lencioni and Liz Wiseman. Like, these people are available for us to learn from. But the question becomes, will you invest in yourself and add more value to yourself so that you can add more value to the organizations and the people that you're working and leading in? And if the answer is yes, then I think people are going to make that leap because they're taking the initiative themselves.
So what I'm wondering is what stops people though from doing that? Because there's, you know, like when I was younger, I think I had that view. I had the sense of I should go to my manager and I was interested in Oracle certification one time, and I went to my manager and I said, you know what? I'll do all the study. I'm really interested in this field. There's a DBA who's willing to mentor me. Would you pay for my books and would you pay for a test when I go to write it? And, you know, the manager had said, write me a business case of why that's important. And I thought, oh my. And so that hit a bit of a brick wall, or I felt that. I never wrote the business case. I just went out and bought the book. And, you know, I've never got certified in Oracle, but it was early in my career. And I think that was one of those moments when I said, like you phrased it very well. You're going to take control of your own destiny to some degree and not let the answer be a no because your manager said, oh, we don't have budget for that this term.
Yeah. You know what NO stands for, Aaron? It's an acronym. NO stands for next.
What does it stand for?
It stands for next opportunity. Okay. So when you get a no, it just means, okay, well, you know, next opportunity. I've got to find another way around this. If when people experience a barrier or an obstacle, you have a choice there. You either accept it and then stay where you are and do nothing, or you find a way through it, over it, under it, around it. But if you really want what's on the other side of that barrier, you're going to find a way. I often tell people as well that, you know, if what you are facing and what you're dealing with in your organization is not more complicated than space travel, then there must be a solution. There has to be, right? Because we figured out how to do space travel. So if it's not more complicated than that, then we just need to find, we know there's a solution. We just haven't discovered it yet. But you asked the question, like, why, what prevents people from making that leap? I think you asked that question. And
yeah, I did.
You know, one of the things I think is people make assumptions about their growth. And one of the assumptions I think they make is that they assume that they're automatically going to grow because I'm working in an organization, I'm gaining experience, I'm automatically going to experience growth as a result of that. And sometimes that's true if you have the right leader above you that is putting you in positions to work on projects where you can experience growth and use your strengths in new ways. But if you don't have that leadership above you that's positioning you for growth, growth is not automatic. People don't automatically get better. They get better with great intentionality.
Sometimes they get stagnant. Like I talked to a recruiter friend of mine one time. So my background's IT. So we were talking about computer languages and how much experience of this or that do you have? And they had made a comment to me, well, if you've been working in the mainframe field for 20 years, okay, I'll put four down. I'll put four down at 4 years experience. And he was a little bit tongue in cheek. Of course, the people with 20 years experience with mainframe, they should know it in and out. But their point was that, you know, after that 4 year mark of working on a technology stack, you've done most of your learning by then. And then after that, you're just getting better at it. But your learning slows down. So your growth opportunities and that kind of thing. But I wonder, Mike, so break this out. So I started this session with saying, how come Billy or Sally or Jane on my team seem to be recognized by my manager? And what am I missing? You know, speaking about, take the analogy or the example that I'm getting passed up. I'm still working hard. I'm solving just as many technical hurdles. What am I missing as a developer? Like, talk to us about that a little bit.
Yeah, well, as a developer, you're what I'm going to refer to as an individual contributor. And so in organizations, we have all kinds of people who work on teams that don't have people reporting to them, but they're doing a job, they're doing a function, and they're contributing individually at a high level. They're high performers, and we can count on them to deliver quality work time in and time out. So these are great people, and organizations need these strong individual contributors to get the work done. But when you're making the leap to say a supervisor position, a lead hand or a management position, and now you have people reporting to you, the skill set is entirely different. And simply because you've been a rock star as an individual contributor in your role for several years, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're actually going to be able to inspire people and you're going to be able to engage people and you're going to be able to resolve conflict with people. The skill sets are entirely different. One of the skills that I think people need as they are moving into that management role and they're going to be dealing with, you know, many different people and many different personalities, the skill I would recommend people investigate and develop in is emotional intelligence. You know, emotional intelligence is a set of emotional and social skills that not only increase your awareness of who you are as a leader, but it also increases your knowledge and ability to express yourself in productive ways that makes you a collaborative thinking partner with people. And it gives you the ability to develop meaningful, trusting relationships so that as you're working with people and you're making decisions, you're trying to solve problems, you are able to do that in a way that manages your stress, manages the stress of the group and the team, and you're going to be able to achieve great work and get great results because of your ability to work with people. But an absence of that skill set of engaging people and building trusting relationships, if you solely rely on your track record as an individual contributor, you're not going to make it. You're not going to be able to do it.
So I can picture kind of a grid then. And I think I would agree with what you're saying. So let's take the scenario of I'm a manager and I've got a whole bunch of people that report to me. They're all technical. They're all part of a technical team. And it's pretty easy to measure throughput. It's pretty easy to measure technical competency. But then, so if you're going to fill in the rest of the matrix, though, in them determining who is it that as a manager, I want to promote into a role of leadership, I would look beyond that. In fact, so much so, I think that, you know, if you didn't have some of these things on the EI spectrum, that you may be passed up. You may be passed up. Can you break out a couple of those that might relate to the example that I gave, a developer who's there, very, very technical, but then perhaps an example or talk about that a little bit to say, okay, I've got a manager that I don't really feel like I'm connecting with yet. I can sense that, or that manager's connecting with other people on the team more. What are the steps that someone goes through to try and bridge that gap? Because it's not intuitive to a lot of the folks, especially in my field.
Yeah, it's a great question. And one of the scenarios I'm thinking of, and I work with a lot of clients who are in this position where on a Friday, they were peers with their group, but then on Monday, they step into their promotion for the first time, and now they are managing the people that they had worked with. Okay. And, you know, the dynamic shifts, right? So it's really funny because some of the peers that they worked with are really graceful about it, and they want to support that person in that role, and maybe they have a good relational history with each other, so it makes the transition easier. There's some people on the team that are peers that were going for the position as well, and they're kind of like, you know, it should be me that's in that role, so that's a different dynamic to manage. But if we focus on the individual contributor who is now a manager on that Monday for the first time, right? I think the secret to success is to come at that with some great humility. Your day one of them as a manager, you're there to learn, you're there to develop, you're there to make things better for the people that you depend on to get the work done.
Somewhat of a servant's heart for the team to try and help them with their job and to get things for the team when they need them,
absolutely,
as opposed to an elevated authority.
Yeah, yeah. What you're not there to do is to bark orders and to tell people what to do. I mean, you do need to give direction for sure. You need to set direction clearly, and you need to ensure that you're making assignments and delegating the work in a way that is utilizing people's strengths and resources. But you're also there to encourage. You're there to provide coaching feedback. You're there to listen and understand. You're there to connect with people. Okay. And by connecting, what I mean is that you're there to build trust with them by following through on your commitments. You're there to care for people, you know, to care about the challenges that they're experiencing. And you're also there to offer your help and assistance. I think one of the things that a person in a management and leadership role needs to do is they need to ask themselves two questions. How can I help you? What are your priorities, and how can I help you? And if you just did those two things, day one, you walked into your position, you said, help me understand what your priorities are and how can I help you? You would go a long way to connecting with people and getting things done through people. Yeah.
One of the dysfunctions that I've seen a lot in developers promoted to manager is because they were so good at their last job, they were a high performing IC, individual contributor, and they're now a manager. And when stuff's going wrong, or when there's a tight deadline, or you know, production is down, they are in there and they're fixing it. And they're saying, no one can do it as fast as I can. No one can do it as well as me. And they don't coach and mentor their team. They don't take that investment. They don't take the time to invest in the people around them to make them all better. And so they end up burning themselves out, end up being a terrible manager. Their teams are miserable and their teams don't know where they should go or what they're supposed to do, because they sort of pick up the easy work. And then when the hard work comes around, the boss takes it. And then they sort of feel demoralized.
Yeah, without question. And if it perpetuates, you create this dependent relationship. And you're absolutely right, Derek. The rest of the workforce looks and goes, well, I don't have to do this hard task here because I know that, you know, my boss is just going to come along and take it away from me anyway. So I might as well just let them have it from the start. So what you really want to create is an interdependent relationship where, you know, everybody that's working on the work says, I really need my manager for support. And then the manager is looking at the team saying, I really need your team. I really need this team to perform because this team makes me a better leader. And how we all work together is by me providing the space for you to make mistakes, to not do it as well as I do the first time. And that's where that humility piece comes in again, to be able to just be okay with it not being done the way that you've always done it, and to give people that opportunity to learn and to do it their way with their own style and approach to get to the result. But it takes time.
I think that is such an important point. I have a friend who does, he's a phenomenal manager. And one of the things that he does is he finds the best people. He puts them into a role and he lets them do things their way. So he still oversees, of course, but he does not expect his team to do things exactly the way that he would do them. And it makes him such an effective leader, and it makes the people on his team feel so empowered. And I mean, I found it really inspiring to watch. I think it's such an important point. I don't know if that comes naturally to a lot of new managers.
I don't think it does. I think the tendency, they feel the pressure to perform. And as a result of feeling that pressure to perform, they quickly slip into, well, we got to be perfect. Like I've got to prove myself. I'm in this new role. So I got to deliver results. And if I don't deliver results quickly and in almost a perfect way, then I'm going to be, you know, I'm going to be in trouble here. So there's a tension there of allowing people to do it their way while they're learning, and maybe sacrificing a little bit of time as they learn, and that tension between trying to build the trust and get things done. And yeah, it's a little bit like a dance, I guess you could say.
Hey, this is Ron and Derek, just taking a quick break from the interview to let you know how you can support the show. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. We've both been Audible members for a long time. Derek, do you have a book you'd like to recommend this week?
Yes, this week I am recommending Quiet, The Power of Introverts in a World That Can't Stop Talking by Susan Cain. This is a wonderful book that deals with the difference between introverted and extroverted personalities. And our industry is full of them. You either are one or you work with one. I highly recommend this.
You can download this week's recommendation or pick another audiobook for free and support this podcast all at the same time by visiting ardentdev.com/audible. That's ardentdev.com/audible. Now back to the interview.
Mike, a lot of the things that you're talking about would really connect back to emotional intelligence. One of the things that's one of the challenges in the software industry is that a lot of people are attracted to, I'm going to sit at my computer and do my solitary task for hours on end. The computer doesn't really require a lot of emotional intelligence in order for you to be successful.
Sure.
And then as soon as you start working with a bunch of humans, it becomes critically important. And so it's maybe not on the radar of a lot of individual contributors whether they're developers or testers, or in some cases, even product managers, because they have specific deliverables that they are creating as opposed to people that they are nurturing and growing. I know that you do emotional intelligence coaching. When you do that and you get people, especially people who are either stepping into or have just recently stepped into management type of roles, What are some of the big revelations that people see? I'm really curious. Like, what are some of the light bulb moments that really stand out to you when you deal with people?
Well, I think there's a couple of things with the emotional intelligence assessments I do. One of them is the first level of assessment is a self-assessment, and it's that leader being honest with themselves and looking at who they are so that they can elevate their awareness on their strengths and their areas of development. So there's a self-assessment component, but there's also a 360 component to the assessments that I do, where people can select multiple raters from the people that they work with, their peers, to their team, to their manager above them, their friends and family as well. And that's when we get some really interesting data, because a person might rate themselves as being, you know, really, really strong in empathy. And then you have this group of multi-raters that will say, you know what, you're not overly empathetic, especially when I'm like approaching a deadline or something like that, right? So we see the gap. We clearly see the gap in the results. And then I think that surprises people what's really interesting, Derek, is what happens then is what does that person do with that information? And I can really tell quickly how the person's going to be successful or not based on their response and reaction to that. And the leaders who are secure in themselves and they're humble with it and go, wow, you know what? I didn't realize that's how I was showing up in conversations with people at work. I didn't realize that's how I was showing up in my family. I want to change this. I want to do something about that. The people that take that opportunity and humbly accept the challenge to grow are the ones that are going to be successful. The insecure leaders, though, they get defensive and they try to justify it. They're like, no way, I'm not like this at all. People, you know what I mean? They have these blind spots. And I'm like, oh boy, you're in for a long road, man. people are not making this stuff up. That multi-rater group that you've selected, they didn't all get together on a conference call or in a meeting and say, we're going to really sabotage this person's development. No, this is how you're showing up and this is how people perceive you. If you want to grow and you want to succeed, you got to pay attention to that feedback and do something with it.
So Mike, I've got a question for you here.
Sure.
There's been a topic, and I think this does relate to emotional intelligence. Connect the dots for me if it does. When I'm envisioning, you know, who should be put into a leadership role, this whole concept of staying calm comes into play for me. Is this like when the wheels are falling off on a project, there's a deadline, something urgent is happening? This whole concept of staying calm. So you see some managers that literally, you know, they might think it's their job to walk around and yell at people until the problem gets resolved. So there's this term that I've come across. A lot of clients will say this, you know, I want to see a sense of urgency. But I think what gets mixed up at times is that gets translated to the team thinks that people should be panicking. They should be standing on the table yelling. I've seen this in lots of different occasions, but my sense is that, you know, you want people in those leadership roles that can stay calm. They can do things quickly, urgently, but this whole panic. And I often think, you know, I see this in the development region a fair amount, is the people are just getting mad and they're saying, I can do this and shove aside. But I have a very difficult time saying that they are someone that's actually going to get promoted into leadership. And I wonder, do you have any experience with that stuff or can you connect that with EI?
Well, there's definitely a concrete connection to EI for sure. One of the components of the EI model deals completely with stress management. And there's a component, it's called a stress tolerance. So it's really the individual's ability to perform in challenging circumstances, in circumstances where there's things that are unknown as well too. So how does a person rise to the occasion and still get the work done in absence of critical information that's needed or in a time sensitive situation, right? How do they deal with those changing priorities? Because as projects are being managed and dealt with, there's changing priorities that take place and there's deadlines to meet and there's a lot of stress that comes with that. So when a leader is practicing emotional intelligence and they have a high level of stress tolerance and have the ability to just be calm, what that does for the team, it sets the tone and the pace for the team to perform. And they look to the leader and they go, okay, well, if my leader's not freaking out here, I shouldn't be freaking out either. They take their cues from the leader. But I also think as well too, I think of a word like hope as well too. I think in challenging times of stress and challenging times of uncertainty, people are looking to the leader for hope that we're going to be okay for the future. And that's where this other component of emotional intelligence comes in, which is called optimism. That whole ability to remain hopeful and resilient despite setbacks that we might be experiencing. And it's that whole ability to create this environment that, you know what, it is challenging right now, but we're going to be okay. And I want to really make it clear for the listeners as well too, that I'm not talking about like a Pollyanna kind of, you know, optimism that is just like, we're going to be really cheerful all the time. I think the really great leaders also will come alongside their people and recognize the struggle. They'll acknowledge it. And
right,
they'll say things like,
it's not false hope just to get someone feeling better about their day.
You're absolutely right. And there's a way to speak to people that you're still calm, but you acknowledge and recognize that there's a struggle right now and you do it in an authentic way, but you also offer that hopeful message that this is how we're going to get through this and things are going to be better tomorrow, right?
You're reminding me this. So this is an interesting conversation because you're now bringing me to a point of, I'm now picturing different managers that I've had and which ones I'm trying to relate what you're saying with what qualities that these leaders had. And I tell you, my favorite manager I've ever had, a Newfoundlander. We had a guy from Newfoundland that I absolutely related to, and he would make me laugh almost every time I talked to him. And we, I would say, battled through some of the most difficult projects of my career. And you know what? I'd sit down with him and we'd put the facts on the table. We'd develop a plan and we'd play the plan. And at one point, I remember talking to him and he had said to me, he said, Ron, this is really hard stuff, eh? But it's kind of fun in a weird, sick, twisted kind of way. And he jokingly said that. And, you know, there's this, yeah, you want to go back into the ring, you know, with a comment like that. You don't feel deflated at all. You know, you feel like your manager's got your back. They're realizing what you're doing is difficult, but they're somehow turning it into this challenging, fun environment that you wouldn't want to be anywhere else. It's really quite neat. But I'm only really resonating with, you know, my Newfoundland manager that, gee, I'd love to work with him again someday. But those are the types of feelings that come out for me when I'm listening to you about this emotional intelligent connection for management and who might grow into those roles. That's what I'm picturing.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I can relate to what you just said too, because I've had managers and leaders I worked with in the past that I wanted to do my best work under their leadership because of the relationship that we had. I had just such respect for who they were as a person, not only like the work that they were doing, but just who they were as a person, their character and their integrity. I think it's a wonderful thing when we look at a leader and we believe in their capabilities, but it's an entirely awesome thing when that leader turns around and says, I really believe in you. I believe in the team. And I think that's what your manager was doing for you. It's like, hey, this is tough, Ron, but you know what? It's kind of fun. And I believe in you. I believe that we're going to get through this because of your capabilities, right?
Yeah, so. I think so too. Because you're not always sure when you're in those situations, you're not always sure what's on your manager's mind. And when you can have this open door policy that you can come in and talk and you're going to leave with perhaps more tools to do your job, or they may help you with it. And, you know, there's a spring in your step and you want to get back into the fight. You just appreciate that so much. Because the other extreme is those managers don't offer those things. And they just say, I'm tired of your complaining. Everybody knows it's a hard thing. Get back to work. And did you get X done? You said you'd get X done. Where's X? And yeah. There's this real, there's a chasm in between these two examples of management.
Yeah, there's one is highly empathetic and one is totally absent of empathy whatsoever, right? And mm-hmm. Some of the best managers that I've worked with have the ability to tell a story about how they were in a similar situation in their career. And when a manager can just relate to the struggle through sharing of their own experience, it just releases the tension and elevates the trust, right? Because now you have an employee that is saying, okay, well, you've been there too. Okay, so what did you do? And there's a real exchange of value and learning that takes place. But sometimes when somebody is managing for the first time, like they're in that role, they think they're trying to prove themselves. They think they have to be perfect. So it puts them in a position to not talk about their past failure, puts them in a position to not admit when they've made a mistake. And what they fail to realize that if they would just be a little bit vulnerable and let people in, it's actually a credibility builder for them, because nobody is perfect. And your team is not expecting you as a manager leading a team to be perfect. They're expecting you to be human. And being human means that we come with flaws. We come with a history of mistakes and failures. That's how we've learned. That's how we've grown and gotten to a place so that we are in organizations, is through learning from our failures as we experience success. And when we can share some of those past experiences, it pours into people and it equips them to get back into it and to get the work done again, right? Be real with people.
You know, I think I could talk to you all afternoon on this topic, Mike. So here's one thing though that I'd like to leave the listeners with. What is one tangible real world thing that someone can do to say, I want to somehow connect with my teammates, I want to connect with my managers, not in a manipulative, I want a promotion kind of way, but in a, perhaps I need to be connecting more than I am today. Like what would be one thing you can leave them with that says, you can try this, not that hard. You just have to be intentional about trying it.
Yeah, what I would say to that is do whatever you can to elevate your awareness on a skill or behavior that you need to grow in that is going to make all the difference in the world for you making that next leap. So maybe it's communication, or maybe it's how to solve problems, whatever it is, identify what that thing is, and then go to work on learning all about that behavior, practicing and applying that behavior, and take it to the next step by letting people know what you're working on, being vulnerable and being truthful and honest and saying, hey, you know what? I know I need to work on my listening skills, so I'm doing that. And then ask people for feedback at the end of conversations. Say, you know what? I'm working on my listening skills. I'd just like to know, based on a conversation we've had on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the highest, how would you rate my listening skills today? What could I do to improve? What do you need more of from me as your leader? What do you need less of from me? And just be open to feedback on that very skill and behavior that you're trying to develop and improve. That's what I would say.
I love it. So it's putting yourself, you know, at least giving some thought to a self-assessment. Because some people might approach this as, let's change the world. Right? You know, the world's broken. That's why I've never been promoted. Everybody else, it's just broken.
The victim mindset. Everybody else is the problem. And you know what? The truth of the matter is everybody wants, most people want to grow. Most people want to go to that next level, right? They have these uphill hopes. But the problem is that everything worth having is uphill all the way. It takes effort. It takes work. And we all have uphill hopes, but a lot of people have downhill habits.
Oh, another one. Another one. So you're leaving us with AOL, the no, the EI, and the uphill habits. Oh, man.
It's too much to take. Eh? It's too much.
Love it. Love the acronyms. I love it.
I need a little book of Mike-isms.
Yeah. I should try to write these down.
All right, Mike, we're coming to the end of our time today. Before we let you go, I know that you have some consulting services. You've written a book. Can you just tell us where people can find you online?
Yeah, absolutely. They can go to changingleaf.ca. That's my website. I'm also on Facebook, so you can go Changing Leaf. You can search that on Facebook and find all my contact information there. I'm also on LinkedIn, so you can find me there as well. Yeah, I'd love for people to connect. And if there's a leadership development need that they have, either through workshops or coaching or a keynote talk, I'd certainly love to engage and see how I can add value to what people are up to.
All right, great. So that's Mike Hayes, changingleaf.ca. Thank you, Mike, for your time today. This is absolutely fantastic.
Awesome. Thanks for having me. It was a real pleasure, guys.
I love it. Thanks, Mike.
Thanks. Take care.
You've been listening to the Ardent Development Podcast. Be sure to visit ardentdev.com for the show notes, including links to the resources mentioned. And don't forget to sign up for email notifications so you're the first to know about new episodes. You can also connect with us on the Ardent Development Facebook page or follow us on Twitter @ardentdev. If you enjoyed the show, tell a friend about it. Thanks for listening.